extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Matt Doyle, Kaylin Carr. In person, in the building, on Apple TV, we have ordered some hummus and pita for David Goss, who is at the GA Cup, just to honor him at this solo place at the table that is not filled. But for the first time in more than 3 years.
We're in Wiebe's basement.
It's a beautiful basement, the wood grain. We put some money in, you know, a little home equity loan.
I say, this is nice.
Yeah, it's decent, huh? Feels like West Elm catalog in here, yeah?
I've spent my time over the... I was just thinking of all the different basements I've been in over the last 3 years. I was like, pretty sure I was in a basement in Atlanta. I was in
Whose basement was that? Just to remind
my girlfriend's parents' basement.
Yes, correct.
I've been in a lot of basements, so this is like a come up. This is a come up for me. Also, I had nowhere else to go, so this is like basically the last choice for me. So
we now have
here.
Someplace to. I had two basements in my life too, in Kansas City, where I screamed out that we were in New York, New York, for 2+ years. With
you deceived everyone. Everybody thought you were still in New York.
Nobody believed it. But we're back. We're in East Harlem. We're in the same studios you see MLS 360 and MLS 360 Countdown coming out of. Look at that, the creative zoom from our producers. And then obviously still on audio. Big show today. I mean, I have a hard time figuring out what to do with my hands, how to talk to you guys. I'm used to being able to scroll Twitter while listening to what Doyle says.
I was literally just scrolling Twitter.
About soccer.
So that's not going to happen.
My computer away from me. So,
just do it on your phone. We'll know when you start using your fingers. But look, match day 7 coming up. We, of course, tape these on Wednesdays now, and they come to you on Thursday morning. So we'll talk through Match Day 7, do some previews, talk through some prizes as far as players, good and bad, in the league so far. And then we have a bunch of your mail, and we have a Golden Boot draft update for you. But I think we just got to start with the obvious, which is, one, that producer Andre says we're on a tight hour timeline today.
Mm.
So all complaints, all
potential
threats. You
can, like, run in the
threats.
Door this time now, though.
Yeah.
That's the difference.
Yeah.
Go to Andre, Sports Viking on Twitter. But what if he comes in, then what?
That's a good question.
I don't know. I mean, we keep dragging out this intro. We might find out.
Yeah, that's true. We'll start eating up all our time if he actually holds us to that hour. What are the pros and cons for you guys from going from home records on what amounts to Zoom to being in person, being together? What are the good things? What are the bad things?
The biggest pro so far of being in the studio is there's leftover pizza in the fridge from the weekend. Every Saturday night, you know, you're watching 75 games at once. Somebody orders pizza. CJ crushed it this week, found a new place. Like, very, very Italian.
I think I had one of those pieces. Was prosciutto on there?
Yeah, it's prosciutto, mushrooms.
Prosciutto, as our boy Tommy Scoops might...
And Thomas Formoso, anybody from the tri-state area who
I'm in Bergen
Italian
County now.
Blood calls it prosciutto.
Okay, I don't have that part of it.
Vermouth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I found a taco place for lunch. That was pretty good.
No taco places around your spot. But
this is
just,
California,
you know, we're finding the positives here.
The other the downside would be I had to, like, get dressed today.
Pants. Pants.
Yeah. Socks.
Well, that's a choice you can make.
Doyle's showing some ankle here. I don't know if the audience
I'm a big low-cut socks guy.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's a no-show guy.
But there's something there.
Yeah. I can't eat lunch during our, well, I guess I could, but, it, you know, I became very accustomed to, like, eating lunch and snacking during a pre-show meeting, to taking naps, perhaps, afterwards.
That's what the cold pizza's for, right? You eat the cold pizza during the pre-show meeting, as I did, and then there are, like, a bunch of nice sofas. I caught a little shut-eye while you guys were talking about the Revs. I've heard – Kalen's been to Foxborough so many times already this year. But he starts talking about that, I am out.
He's got a passport for the Bar Louie in Patriots
Punch
place.
Card, yeah,
exactly. Punch card, it's like, there. Welcome back, Mr. Yeah. Carr.
They got the like, curly straws going on. It's wild, man.
What do we need props? It's a little bit cold, sterile in here. I do have the Hail Matan shirt going on.
It's not a prop. That's clothing. That's wardrobe.
It's true, but it does bring a little bit of life. It's a lot of Matonic energy in here today.
So that's nice. But we don't have what we used to have. We used to have the wall of junk behind us, basically. The bottle
heads. Like the clean look. I like the West Elm look, as you as you described it, yeah.
What about no cat structures, though? There's no place to climb.
It's tough. Yeah. It's tough. Like I'm going to have to go home and have a very long conversation with both cats.
Yeah. I was like, it feels like we left something behind. There's something missing here.
A sense of abandonment.
The chance of a cat ambush.
Correct.
Or sirens. Like, it's just kind of, it's a little quiet.
That's actually, I think, the number one. I think the background noise, it's eerily quiet in here.
Yeah, I'm not worried about an ambulance driving by or police sirens, nothing. So.
Children running into the set.
Yeah, it's like, but you know in a horror movie where it's like, it's too quiet?
A little bit like that.
Yeah.
But you know Anders is on the other side of that door? So what's going to happen if we say something that he doesn't like or go past an hour? Well, we'll find out, I guess. Let's jump into soccer talk here. That's what we're here for. Andy and Revs Nation hit us up. Said, what's the biggest surprise for you guys after 6 weeks, positive or negative? We've really done this on the team side. So we're going to switch it up. We'll do it on the player side. Let's start positive, and we'll go negative. I'm going to throw some out here. How about Aiden Morris under Wilfred Nancy?
I mean, it's positive. I think the shirt you're wearing is more germane, really.
Alexandre Matan.
He had not done anything in his two-plus years. It was two-plus or it was just two? He had
it's
not done anything in his 2 years in MLS, and he's got a goal, I think, four assists under Nancy. And, look, this is why they went out and they got Wilfred Nancy, because he does great work developing young players. They play attractive soccer, and Aiden Morris, Matan are probably the two biggest winners so far from that team, and there's been a lot.
Morris, no goals, and really that's not his game, but
yeah,
three goals already.
3-2
I don't know. It might be his game. You see the way he took that off the back heel?
Yeah, that was nice.
That was a pretty clean strike. I mean, that's the one thing I think of Nancy and the way he has come in. To me, I think I said it before in the preview for this match coming up against DC. I think he's been the off-season interleague change of the year as far as making the biggest impact on a single team. Because last year, at times, this team looked really slow. It looked really plodding. And now you see the tempo they're playing at. And then also they couldn't put teams away. And now it's like they get a lead. You see them, no problem. I think 10 goals in the last two games. But Aiden Morris, he's been pushed a little further up the field. And I think, yeah, no goals for his first 40 some odd matches, and now he has three in his last two games.
If you're Aiden Morris and you see Wilfred Nancy come, and then you look at, like, you know, Georgie, different profile, different position, but Kone, guys like that, and think, okay, why not me? You're playing next to Nagby, who can sort of reciprocate the same role that Wanyama played. It's working. It's working. Now, it was against two teams that were a little overmatched, so we'll see this weekend in D.C. Who also might be overmatched? TBD. How about Hector Herrera?
Yeah.
That's a positive.
It's a massive positive for a franchise that needed something like this to happen, because they went out and they spent a lot of money, you know, paying Hector Herrera, and he was pretty clearly miserable last year, and they were worse with him on the field. And I didn't think that bringing in Ben Olsen, who's, you know, he was a good manager in MLS for a long time, but it's not the type of big name that a lot of the biggest DPs respond to. But apparently those guys hit it off, because Ache's out there every week. And granted, Dynamo aren't running away with it or anything, but, like, they're playing good soccer. He's demanding the ball. He's been really responsible with it, but dynamic with it at the same time. And he's tracking defensively. And there was none of that from him last year. None of that from the Dynamo overall, to be fair. But, like, you bring in a guy like that to have him lift the entire side's level. And he's actually doing that this year. And it's, I know, like, we're going on a little bit about a team with two wins and three losses, but they've been fun to watch, and he's been at the heart of it. And there is, I think, real reason, if you're a Dynamo fan, to be, like, pretty happy through five games.
Yeah, some hope. Some hope. I think, you know, for a franchise and some fans that were really for a while.
Is he going to start to cry?
No, no, no.
Yeah. He got it. There was a little bit. Yeah, he's in. It's just because he's with us now.
Yeah.
It's just because they're playing the Galaxy this week.
No, okay, here we go. I can't say Herrera has been a surprise to me, because if you watch him over the years, I mean, this is just how good he is. I think he can be one of the best midfielders in Major League Soccer, and you would expect him to be. I think the bigger surprise, Doyle, I think you hit it, is more the way the team is playing, that they're playing with the ball, they're dominating possession, I think often 60-some-odd percent. I saw that week one in
Cincinnati. And not aimless. Like, yeah. Really, like, pointed, and they're creating penetration. They don't have the talent in the final third to turn it into goals,
right.
I don't think.
Or even, honestly, really chances right now.
Yeah, no. Fair.
Artur, I think, as I mentioned, interleague moves, like that helped a lot as far as giving him that platform. They've given him a lot of freedom and said, go get the ball, make the game to Hector Herrera. And then, yeah, but they do need to figure out what where the goals are. Sebas Ferreira has been basically benched.
He's on the other side of this. The positive, the negative coming up.
But let's keep it positive for Houston.
Yeah, we're staying in the positive side. How about Leo Chu? That's positive.
Oh, is Anders going to come running through the door now?
Pros and cons of being in the studio. One of the cons is that the chat, at least in its previous form, is gone. One of the cons is also now that Anders can talk to me in my ear. And so that's where the Leo Chu shout comes from. But he is a David Goss theorem, like, year after.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of recipient here.
Like, it should have been last
year.
Right?
Yeah, it should have been last year, but now it's this year.
He's
at least
have to
for
come
now.
Up with a new theorem. Yeah.
I know.
I like it.
We'll change it for him while he's gone.
The thing about Chu is he, like, obviously he's been incredibly productive the past 2 weeks, and it's nice to see because he obviously has talent, but he plays winger in a different way than Jordan Morris and Christian Roldan, who've been the primary wingers, Albert Rusnak as well. Like, those guys do not beat you off the dribble and get vertical, and Chu is not, like, nobody's mistaking him for prime Ignacio Piatti, but he has a little bit more juice 1v1 with the ball, and he could be dangerous from out wide on the left in a way that those other guys weren't. Like, Jordan Morris is brilliant. When he's healthy, he's a best 11 caliber winger, but not from coming out wide. He does it by almost playing as a second forward. So Chu has given them a little bit of balance, and created a good problem for Brian Schmetzer to have, because now you have too many good productive players to put on the field all at once, and like that is kind of the hallmark of a team that'll probably win stuff.
I think it works spacing wise too, because you don't really want Nuhu going forward.
Correct.
So now you have somebody who can stretch that side of the field a little bit, give space for Ladero to come inside, and then you have Jordan Morris, who's also been the beneficiary of that little combination.
It's kind of similar to the next guy on the list, in Schaffelberg.
Yeah.
As somebody who can just nice get player. Forward, really stretch the field. You mentioned not wanting to get forward. Nashville obviously going to be a little bit more defensive, but it looked at times where Hany Mukhtar had no partners, and it was maybe him carrying it, or CJ Sapong or Teal, but now he has Schaffelberg as far as somebody that knows is going to be there.
Schaffelberg on one side and Picot on the other side, Fafa, and then Teal for the most part up top. And even if those guys aren't going to score 10 goals each, they're going to run with him. They're going to be in the open field with him. And if you give Hany that kind of support, you're probably going to see more weekends like what he did last week when he had a goal and assist in that win against Orlando.
Timothy Tillman's another guy. You know, I put a tweet out yesterday just because I was like, huh, why has Jose Cifuentes only made one MLS start? Now he's at international
duty. Did Vince
get
at you? Did Vince from Scuff get at you? Anytime you talk good about Timothy Tillman, Vince is going to be
in
your ear.
I think there was something that went through my mentions, and I was like, huh, Vince, you're very, very invested.
he's persistent.
Yeah, but he's been very, very good. He sort of started slow, and I was like, huh, does he fit the right way? But integrated very quickly, scoring goals, like in the press, has been very good as well. And sometimes a player gets sort of pushed into the background a little bit. Sifu has so far, but credit to Tillman. How about Simon Becher? That's not his real name.
He's
Simon
from
Becher.
The French part of Topeka,
exactly. The French Quarter in Topeka, Kansas.
Where is Topeka, by the way?
Where do you think Topeka is? That's a better question.
I would say the middle of nowhere.
Okay.
Yeah. It's in the middle of Kansas,
Are we saying Kansas is nowhere? Are we saying nowhere in Kansas?
No.
It's like a Russian nesting doll, right? Like, Kansas is the middle of nowhere, and Topeka is in the middle of nowhere in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. Yeah. All my waffling basically tells you that you're essentially right, that I just don't want to admit that Kansas is the middle of nowhere, but sort of geographically, you know. It's in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
he's been good. I mean, he came off the bench a couple times, and I think Vanny switched to two-striker formation, and you could see pretty instantly that him and Brian White had a good connection. They were able to combine. He's pretty direct. He's a poacher. He came in at the Minnesota United match at the very end, or he played about 20 minutes that one, but he came in. He actually wins the header off the goal kick,
mm-hmm.
and then completely busts his butt to get to the very end, and is just optimistic about it going to the back post. It just has that kind of like instinct as far as a goal scorer. But it's not even just that. He's causing havoc. He drew a red card last week. He set up Brian White for a couple goals. I think Vanny was really thinking of him as maybe just a guy off the bench who could really press and had good energy and good instincts in the box. And then you're like, oh no, I think this guy actually needs to be on the field. We need to actually switch the formation to get him involved.
More goals going forward this year, Simon Becher or your guy in Orlando?
I still got my money on Duncan McGuire. Like, if last week didn't convince Oscar Pereja that Duncan McGuire needs to start, I'll say I think last week probably convinced Oscar Pereja that Duncan McGuire needs to start.
Are these guys available for Golden Boot Draft?
I have a discovery update? Claim on Simon Betcher.
I think you're gonna have to choose between Betcher and Duncan McGuire. I don't think you can discover.
I already drafted Duncan McGuire.
He did.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah. That was, you know what? That's a strong move for your brand. Yeah. I'll give it to you. All right, let's go to the negative side. We do have the Golden Boot race lower in the show. On the negative side, I'm going to go Ricky Pooj to start this out.
How much do you put on him? How much do you put on the Galaxy overall?
I put more of it on the Galaxy overall, but I think within the way that they're trying to play, he's also not at the level he was at last year. It feels to me like he's holding on to the ball a little longer, and I might hold on to it longer too if I was playing it to the wingers right now, and no disrespect to those guys, it's just like
that's pretty disrespectful.
It's not coming back to you. The ball's not being advanced. You're not winning any 1v1s. You're not getting into prime assist positions.
Okay, so just to be clear, you're saying Ricky Pooj needs to be better, but now it's about the wingers.
No disrespect.
Okay.
Galaxy attackers. Yeah. Let's just go the whole from Dayon to Ricky to Tyler Boyd to Mamo to Ephra to.
Do we think after what happened last weekend in the second half against the Sounders, where the Galaxy were pretty clearly much better than Anders' favorite team, the Seattle Sounders,
yes,
playing that 3-5-2, do we think that it's like Greg Vanney's got to give it up? He's got to make the switch to the 3-5-2, and like I understand formations aren't everything, but just you have to be realistic about the personnel that you have, and especially with Chicharito coming back either this week or next, you have three forwards that you can play. They look better in the 3-5-2. You can release your wing backs, and both Raheem Edwards on the left and Caligari on the right, those guys are better going forward than they are defensively. With Jalen Neal's development, you have another center back who you could put out there and trust. Doesn't it feel like, okay, we've reached the point, you have to make the switch?
I think it does. And I know who didn't read the rundown now.
Oh, sorry about that.
It's lower in the rundown. But we can have this conversation.
I told you I was
now.
Napping during the rundown.
Yeah, that's true. You don't have a computer either. So I don't blame you for any of this. I personally blame Anders. I think that Greg Vanney came to that realization in the second half. I just don't know if he'll play the card forward.
Yeah.
Like, if you listen to his press conference after that game, he was sort of effusive about their ability to get the ball in the positions he wants, cause more chaos, like, create more decisions for opposing defenders. Because I don't think they've been forcing back lines into a ton of difficult decisions. Like, everything is happening in front of you. So it's a pretty straightforward task for opponents until that second half.
Yep.
And that comes down to the movement of Preston Judd. It puts Jovalich in a position where he is going to be better. The question I have, I look at the transfer policy as well. Two wingbacks coming in on U22 deals. It feels to me like if you were going to do that, you at least had in your mind that this was a possibility. Otherwise, given the defensive issues over the last couple seasons, why go get two young attacking fullbacks to play in a four-man back line? That doesn't make sense to me, but I'm not in the rooms with the Galaxy. Maybe they see those guys able to do that. Now it comes down to which of the forwards you choose.
Yeah. You had to get one because Araujo left. So
you did.
That makes sense from that standpoint. But I think you're right that if the wingers aren't producing, at some point, facing a system that needs two wingers to be productive. And even when you go back to last year, I almost feel like the wingers were an upgrade and they were a problem last year. And it was Cabral and Douglas Costa.
And Grand Sierra.
But at least those guys were more threatening. And, you know, Cabral wasn't able to finish, but he was getting in behind. He was, you know, pulling people outside to create room for the strikers and then making more dynamics or more space for Pooj to be dynamic. And now you say, okay, well, Memo's more of a guy that's, you know, going to be sort of in the half space or underneath and looking to tuck in and combine more closer to Delgado. And Boyd is, you know, he's more of a guy who wants to get it to feet and maybe try and face up one-on-one, even though, you know, that hasn't quite come off as of yet. So I think, yeah, the idea of Judd does give you a little bit more as far as somebody that can really – I think the concern he was thinking about is defensively.
Yeah.
How are these two strikers going to work together more so than can we push for goals? Because, of course, you want as many strikers on as possible. But in this case, I think Judd might give them a little bit more for now. The question is, if he hasn't done it by now, does he seems strong that he doesn't want to go that direction.
That is the way it seems. every lineup that gets put out will be interesting in that sense. Can I ask you guys, actually, you know what? We had Houston Dynamo and the Galaxy an extra times game to watch. It was my game, and we've given it so much time that I feel justified in my choice of that game. I was going to make a lot of MLS Cup jokes from years gone by, Kalen, but you've escaped with just one or two of those. So
we should make Anders run the highlight of Kalen's goal.
Yeah, roll the tape.
Roll the tape. Come on,
just the
Kalen.
First half, though.
Or, come on,
yeah, only the first half. Yeah. All right, some more. We're on the negatives. How about any Austin attacker not named Driussi or John?
No, John's technically not an attacker, right? Like,
that's
their
true.
Best attacker is a fullback. Jossi Zardes has had a tough time fitting in the ways that I think we kind of suspected it might not be seamless, because again, he and Driussi kind of score the same types of goals. Not that Driussi is scoring many goals at this point, but it's, you know, it's back to the wingers. Rigoni has offered nothing. Diego Fagundes is really struggling, and it seems like there's maybe not him and Josh Wolf are not seeing eye to eye. He's been benched. Ethan Finley, like, at this point in his career, Ethan Finley's a good sub. He's not a guy who you should be relying upon to key the offense, and that's a recipe for things going pretty wrong. And so far, it's not a disaster for Austin. They got a couple of wins.
Yeah, they're above the playoff line. Like, and it's sort of weird to look at the table and see that. But
yeah, but we they got outplayed against Colorado 2 weeks ago. They took a 1-0 lead, and they were never threatening to turn it into 2-0, really.
Yeah, but it's also not just the attackers for Austin.
Exactly.
Right? Like, the back line has been, I think, probably the bigger issue.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, they've been injuries and form absences, like, pretty, they've used Ring back there. It's been one sort of disaster after the next, even, yeah, down through Champions League. Historic loss, like, the back line has been the biggest issue, but I think it's sort of, you've sort of seen how one piece falls and then the next, and it's almost like a domino effect. They've had one of the toughest starts to the season, but yeah, I agree with the Giassi one seemed a little strange to me to begin with, because it's Giassi works best in a system where you know you're going to get service from wide, you know you're going to get balls in the box, but then, yeah, how does that, does he create space for Driussi coming in, or does he occupy it? And even in the past when we saw Gite there, it seemed like he was maybe clogging space more than creating space for others.
But that's understandable with Gite, because Gite didn't move, right? His box instincts were really unrefined, like really poor, and Jossi's the opposite. Jossi is reliably making good runs. It's just, it kind of overlaps with Driussi. And then the other thing is, like, the patterns of play that lead to the types of final ball that Jossi got for years in Columbus and then afterwards in a few places, you know, those pullbacks from the end line or from the side of the 18, Austin doesn't create those. Austin's pattern of play, when they get out wide, they will try to release the fullback, but then it's a cross from, like, way out wide. And those are always low percentage crosses, or they'll pull it back to the winger at sort of the corner of the box and loop in to the back post, a back post cross. And those could be really effective. Like, Damir Krylak scored 40 goals in MLS just off of that pattern of play. But the issue with that is, once you pull it back like that, the opposing defense is no longer running at their own goal. The opposing defense is able to stop their momentum, turn around, and attack the cross that you're sending in. So Austin end up having, they do not create the types of chances you would think that they're capable of creating off of crossing. And that's a problem, because they are settling for crosses just far too often.
Was there any big injury last year for them? There wasn't, right?
No, they were really, really healthy throughout the year.
So, I don't know. Dave and I have had that depth argument a number of times, but that remains an issue for a lot of MLS teams. And, you know, when you go to try to compete on multiple fronts, as Austin tried this year, that is going to jump up and bite you. You know, like you said, Kalen, one domino, and then all of a sudden there's a cascading effect there. Will Yagata, on the not-so-positive surprise side. Doyle, would you like to comment on
another team that is crossing the ball way too much? Like, they're set, like, Sporting, they lack patience in the final third. But they've also, they don't seem to have a good idea of when to hold on to the ball in midfield, and when to go. And that's weird to me, because the last dozen games of last season, which was when Eric Thome and Willie Gatta came in, they were they were murder in transition. Like, they were all on the same page, and it's all roughly the same personnel that we're seeing this year. But it's they're not opening up the field like they did. They're not getting the quality of chances. Agata's still getting – like, he should have more than one goal. He should have three or four goals. But he – like, it's not as relentless and ruthless as it was the final third of last season when they almost climbed above the playoff line. And it's disappointing because I took him first in the Golden Boot draft, and I think I'm going to lose. I think I'm going to finish last place, and I don't like that.
Well, the positive, not to, you know, get your spirits up too high for the Golden Boot draft, but is the players coming back around him. You know, Johnny Russell comes back in.
But the problem is one of those players might come in for him. Right? Like Alan Pulido could be.
No. Thanks, guys.
You don't really see a way for them to play together?
Not really.
Not in Peter's three.
No.
Because he'll never go away from the 4-3-3. And Pulido is really, like, he's not a winger. He's not a, like, maybe you try him once as an 8.5, but I can't see that.
I mean, when they were at their most explosive as an attacking team recently is when Pulido's dropping in and Shallowy and Russell.
No, when they were at their most explosive was the second half of last season.
Yeah.
When Willy Agata looked like the MLS Erling Haaland, man. He was amazing.
By the way, for Sporting Kansas City, some good news. Danny Rosero has made his first start, the new Colombian center back for them. But they do got to get the attack rolling.
Still, yeah. You would think whoever gets up there with Russell back in and hopefully Gadi Kinda coming back at some point soon, that it's going to give more opportunities for whoever that number nine is.
So we have Brenner and Vasquez not producing as well. It's just the Union overall on our negative. We'll save that for a game preview here in a second because they're facing off this weekend. We do have a stat of the week to talk about here that we were sitting around in the pre-show meeting, just sort of, I don't know, wondering.
I woke up long enough to dig this one up.
Yeah, yeah. And take us through it. Because we were sort of like, huh, are there less goals being scored? It was just a hunch.
There are. there are significantly fewer goals being scored. Overall, last year, is 2.96 goals per game. It was particularly high the first month of last season. There were just multiple teams who had given up 15 goals
anybody
in their first six
Austin.
Games. Yeah.
Hey. What's up?
Yeah, since they were one of them. Yeah,
Miami.
And this year it's down to 2.45 goals per game, which it would the slightly under the record low of single season goals per game, which was 2.46 in 2010, which was the heart of Kalen Carr's career. We don't know if that's.
How many strays am I going to catch this episode?
Causation, correlation.
Yeah. No, it was definitely my fault, not Robbie Keane, right? He was doing his part, to be fair.
He didn't get there till 2011. Goals started coming right up in 2011. So there you go.
Yeah, we're back.
We do have the cure.
I think there are a couple of things here. One, the big one is the bad teams aren't as bad at the start of the year as they were last year. Like, there were a bunch of disasters at the start.
Now, there are a bunch of teams that don't have points or haven't scored goals or, like, have not looked good. But I guess, like, suss that out a little bit.
Look at the Rapids. The Rapids got smoked in week one. They gave up four goals. They looked like they were going to be the worst team that ever played in MLS. Now, granted, they're still winless. They've given up four goals in their subsequent five games. Like, these managers and these players have done a good job of, okay, well, first we got to be tough to play. We'll fix the attack when we fix the attack, but first we got to be tough to play against. Almost everybody's been able to do that. You know, RSL, probably an outlier at this point. I guess Montreal as well might be outliers at this point. Last year, there were like six teams like that. The other big thing is set pieces. Teams have been so much better defending set pieces this year. I went through the numbers through week six of last. So it was through 170 games last year, MLS teams had scored 57 set piece goals. Through 166 games this year, so almost the same sample size, it's 41 goals off of restarts. That's a massive difference. That is a massive difference.
I just went and looked, by the way, because I was like, okay, there's got to be sort of those five or six teams that are just getting, you know, not smoked, but like giving up two and a half goals a game at this point. There's only five teams with double-digit goals allowed right now.
Yeah.
That feels really low. And a lot of teams around the league, even mid-table, low-table, that are like seven goals allowed in five or six games. You know, like just not enough to juice those numbers up a little bit. Any theories on your part, Kalen?
Well, one, I'm glad that it's not just us being poor at drafting. yeah. So that makes me feel better. Two, I would venture to guess that it's harder to hold on to attacking talent, and the type of attacking talent that's coming into MLS now is a lot younger than it was in the past. So maybe now, instead of going back to 2010, bringing in a Robbie Keane, who was still pretty young, but probably like late 20s, early 30s, I think, right around that mark at least, is now, you know, Castellanos, is now
Adam Buxa.
Tejan Buchanan,
Chicho Arango,
guys that are developing, Rossi, guys that are developing and then being sold abroad. And it's not to say that it's not coming in still, because clearly it is with Thiago Almada. You look at Tejan leaving, Dylan Barrero comes in, but it might take a little bit of time for, especially when you sign young players,
the
like
theorem for this.
Brenner, right? Like, yeah, David Goss theorem. Guys that come in where it's like, okay, 1 year, I don't know how this is. Next year, you come in and you say, wow, this is like 15, 16, 18 goals, or, you know, Castellanos, the way we've seen that, Brenner. So I think that's a part of it, whereas you can keep that continuity a little bit more in the back. The other thing I think, too, is just it's still early in the season, so I would not to make you do more work, Doyle, but to say, like, through these first whatever games, it's been low, but I look at a team like NYCFC, or I look at a team like the Revs that are around it and more solid defensively right now than going forward. But you see the pieces there and you say, okay, well, if Talis Magno moves out wide and they get a nine and they bring somebody else in, like, how does this suddenly sort of change the picture of how these teams might do? And I think sometimes that last bit of continuity is harder to build almost moving forward early in a season.
Absolutely.
Than coming in and saying, hey, let's get into two blocks of four. Let's, you know, defend deep or be solid or defend set pieces or study.
So to sort of your point here, again, I'm just looking at 2020 to 2023. Basically, five of the top scoring teams are not performing anywhere near that level. So the Union were the top scoring team in MLS on 72 goals. We're not seeing that from the Union. Montreal were second in the East in goals, or third, I should say. They scored 63. Cincinnati scored 64. They're not explosive right now either. New York City is a good mention. They're basically at one goal per game that they're getting in the Western Conference. LA Galaxy were that team. Austin were that team. 58 goals, 65 goals apiece. We're not seeing that from them either. So, yeah, there is some disparity with teams that were sort of driving some of these numbers last year and haven't yet reached their peak, and I'm sort of doing mental math
Philly
here.
Philly was teams dropping that are, touchdowns on teams last
year. I know. No bonus games. Yeah. Bonus games are over. Like, don't even have a bonus game in this league anymore. It's just an interesting start to the season. And the expansion team's not bad.
Yeah, that's another
thing. Top of the table.
Like Charlotte gave up 15 goals in their first six games last year, and how many has St. Louis given up? Like six.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Cincinnati. You could sort of depend almost on an expansion team coming in. One of them, you'd have the outliers like came in like LAFC or Atlanta, but often it took a lot longer. And actually, you should credit St. Louis for going the other way of bringing goals and adding to the tally more than anything.
Also, you look at 2022's Golden Boot, like we just talked about, sort of referred to. Okay, the struggles in Austin. Well, Driussi isn't exactly firing in the league yet.
Yep.
Hany Mukhtar just scored his first goal. Daniel Gazdag was in that spot. Brandon Vasquez was there, and we're not seeing that production from those players so far. So, yeah, you do have the guys leaving, but also some of the guys who are still here. We're just still waiting for them to hit that form from 2022. All right.
Let's go, honey. I got him.
Come on, man. Let's do it.
Squad.
I do want to look. If you're speaking of goals and predicting who scores goals, take it from us, the absolute experts on this particular subject. I just want to remind everybody, go to MLSsoccer.com/gaming. MLS squad pick is out. You pick five players that you think are going to score on the same match day. If all five do score, you win a prize. You can win every single week. But if you play, it doesn't matter if you win, doesn't matter if you get zero goals, doesn't matter if you have five Willy Agatas on your team. If you play, you're automatically entered into a random drawing at the end of the year for the grand prize of $10,000. So MLSsoccer.com/gaming, MLS squad pick. Pick your five players. Today we are going to pick a player from our Golden Boot squads that we are guaranteeing is scoring. And so I don't know who's in first, but I am I'm highlighting. Congratulations, Kalen.
I got a text.
And
Tommy
also
Scoops.
Tom. 16 goals, 8 assists so far this season for this squad. And that is even with Hany and Brandon Vasquez on one goal apiece. So as you look at your team here, who are you guaranteeing scores a goal?
Where's my squad? This is what I would
okay. Help me. It's Hany Mukhtar, Brandon Vasquez, Jesus Ferreira, Denny Bawanga, which was a great pick. Fourth. Picked fourth on your team. Wow.
Well done, Scoops.
Venzier, Sebastian Ferreira, not the best pick. Lucas Elorean, a good one. Facundo Torres, Brenner, Martin Ojeda and Shaqiri, which is just...
That's a late flyer. He'll be back.
That's a Tom pick.
I'm going to go... I'm between two. I've got Bowanga against Austin, which I like. Or I think I'm going to go with a late pick that we had, which is Zeller Rayan against DC. He went off against DC earlier this year and had two goals. So that matchup works well. I think DC plays... They're going to try to contest the field, I think, to try to not allow Columbus space. And I think those little runs that Zeller Rayan makes, where he kind of just makes those little curling runs, ducking in behind that back heel to Aiden Morris. To be running one direction and just hit it perfectly behind you. That's not easy to do. Mind you, hitting that first time also as cleanly as Aiden Morris did. I mean, that was impressive. So I think I'm going to go with Zeller Rayan in this one.
I like the pick. David Goss in second, just one goal behind you and Tommy Scoops on 15. We'll pick somebody off his team at the end of this one. Who's in third? Oh, Doyle, you've been just killing your team, and I'm in last place.
You're in third.
14 goals. You're only two back.
You're
only two back.
Wait, why is everybody bagging on my team? I have Klaus. I have Benteke. Yes. Jeremy Bobosi's got a couple. Willie's got one.
Yeah.
Who else do I have? Duncan McGuire's got one.
You have Chicharito, so you might have. He might be coming back in.
I have Chicharito and Jovalich.
You have a tough run here in the middle of your draft of Joseph Martinez, Sergio Cordova, and Giacomo Veroni. Giacomo Veroni, arguably the worst pick of the Golden Boot draft.
Yeah.
Arguably. Who are you taking on your team?
Who am I taking on my team? Head says Christian Benteke. I think he's going to find chances. I think the Crew are going to win, but Benteke is finding chances every single week, and the way DC are built, they're oriented towards getting the big man the ball in places where he can put it in the back of the net, and he's been pretty decent at that. So I think the head says Benteke. The heart says Duncan McGuire. The rookie is going to get a start and play significant minutes. And I think that Orlando, the way they're playing right now, they need someone who doesn't need the ball to be effective. They need someone who is going to work off the ball and open up the types of spaces that Ojeda and Facu Torres and Pereira can use. So I think this is I'm giving the 2-for-1. I'm saying both Christian Benteke and Duncan McGuire.
It doesn't matter. As long as you go enter to play, you could be wrong. Doyle could be wrong. You could still win $10,000 at the end of the year.
I like the Benteke shout. I think he has three goals.
He does.
Should have more.
Yes.
He's based on the chances he's gotten.
It's kind of the story of his career.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But you would think it would translate. You know, you see that player come over, and you think it would translate a little bit better. I think getting Funtas back in around click, the three of them, that was the first time I think all season the three of them played together. So I think seeing they need their big time players to step up. And I mean, if you're a DC United fan, you're going to be tracking the Golden Boot race for Benteke because I think 10 goals is not going to be enough. It's got to be 15 plus, closer to 20 if they want to have a chance of sniffing the playoffs. Like, he's got to be at a return rate that is high right now. I think he's at like 20% I think he's below 20% on his shot to finishing ratio. So
Fontas in the same boat, but probably more in the like 10 to 15 zone. And then we might see Lewis O'Brien this weekend. TBD. Very curious to see how Wayne Rooney uses him. Now, I am in last.
Mm-hmm. How many goals?
13. So 13. It's a tight table. It's 16, 15, 14, 13. Jeez.
Everybody's acting like Tom and Kaler are running away with it.
I felt better about this.
Who was doing the lobbying on that front? But, I got some guys that can jump up. And look, when Lorenzo Insigne comes back.
Oh, yeah. You're going to get you'll get a good 210 minutes before he goes away again.
If he leaves, get some TAM on the sale if we recoup costs?
Absolutely not.
Okay, that's tough. Look, Diego Rubio's back. He hasn't scored for me. Leo Campana someday will come back. Carlos Vela this weekend.
From what I understand, they were a little surprised he didn't go last weekend. Uh-huh. So I would expect to see Leo Campana for the final 20 minutes. And what Phil Neville has said all offseason, he said, we want to play with a two. We want Campana and Joseph up top together. If Joseph can go 90.
And you have Joseph, right?
And I have Joseph, yeah. Mm. So if Joseph can go 90,
I
think we will see 20, 25 minutes of Campana and Joseph together.
Okay, all right. I feel good about that. And look, Carlos Vela says he's been bad. If he gets good, then I'll be fine with that. And I have Copetti and Yakumakis and Ura and Driussi's going to get going. I'm going to guarantee a goal for Enzo Copetti against RSL. Right now...
That's good money. Yeah. That's pretty good.
Right now, betting against that RSL back line is where I think it's going to net out. Anyway, MLSsoccer.com/gaming, MLS squad pick. Let's jump into match day 7. We promised we would talk Cincinnati, Philadelphia Union. This could be yet another Eastern Conference final. Cincinnati atop the table, but Pat Noonan says we're not playing well. That's good. That's new. That seems like a new dawn, new day in Cincinnati. Philadelphia Union, meanwhile, were a team that I think we all sort of expected to, reach similar levels as last year. Have we undersold the effect that CCL is having on them, Doyle? Is it something else? I mean, they beat Atlas 1-0 last night at home on a late penalty from Daniel Gazdag.
Didn't play well.
Right, but that was part of the issue, right?
Yeah, though, to be fair, they rotated the squad for Atlas. Like, if you look at it, was Nathan Harriel at left back. Damian Lowe started over Jack Elliott. McGlynn and I think Pereira both started in central midfield.
It was
Torres who started up top or kind of as a almost like a false 10. It was interesting from Jim Kerr, and it was interesting it seems like he's putting more emphasis on this game against Cincinnati than he did on the midweek CCL game. And maybe it's a combination of them not quite having the chip on their shoulder or not quite having the same motivation and the same desperation that they had entering last season. I think it's hard to keep that up year after year after year. And part of it is juggling CCL and MLS play, which we've seen for 15 years now, is very, very difficult. But it's also a little weird because saying they don't have the same motivation, the same chip. You finished second place in everything that you played in last year. You should have a bigger chip on your shoulder. You should be even more motivated because you came so close. And literally, they are one of the greatest MLS teams that 2022 Philadelphia Union, they are one of the greatest MLS teams to not win a trophy. And we thought they would come into this year and be lights out because of it, and it hasn't worked out that way.
Hmm. Margins are tight. Margins are tight. And I think also with them, they feel like they can rotate and get a result. They got a pretty good result. Probably, didn't play their best, but I don't think 1-0 is the worst result considering.
Yeah.
So they're in a good spot going forward. And I think they also have been feeling like they need to get their footing more in league play. And I would circle this one this weekend against Cincinnati. I know people are going to say, Seattle, St. Louis is maybe the marquee match because it's going to decide who's at the top. But I loved watching these two teams battle in the playoffs last year, and I think there's so much history, as we all know, going between the two franchises with Jim and Pat and Albright and all that. So I think, this Cincinnati team, the interesting thing was Pat Noonan came out on the other side and was like, on the interview on 360, and was told Sasha, like, this was not at all part of the plan, because I think Sasha asked him, is 40% in the last two games in possession, is that good enough for you guys, that part of the plan? He's like, absolutely not, we haven't been playing well, which is kind of true. You think about this Cincinnati team and you say, what we saw last year, it was so end-to-end, it was exciting, they were scoring goals, sometimes conceding too many goals if you wanted to get a home playoff game at least, and that's why they had to go on the road and play at Philadelphia, and that's how they had to learn that tough lesson. But I look at that game and it was like, I think it was a flock, like, outside of the left foot, good finish, but kind of like out of a play that had come from some pressure. And even the play that Brandon Vasquez has a chance late, it comes from a rare mistake from Jack Elliott, who slips and lets him in, and Blake makes the incredible save. So I think this one's going to be really tight. I personally don't have as much concern around possession when it comes to FC Cincinnati. I don't look at that team and say, that's a team that's going to dominate the ball in all phases of the game, and that's how they need to be successful. I think they're more of a team that's going to be dangerous on in transition. I like Moreno and Huobito, but I don't think they're two that are going to like really...
Seems unlikely we're going to see Huobito this weekend.
Yeah.
By the way. Not training right now.
Yeah, I saw he wasn't in team. That's a big loss. But the big difference for me is defensively, they've been way better this year. Miazga's been fantastic. Huobito, when he's been. Mosquera, great signing. They talked about wanting to get younger, more athletic in the back line. I think he goes a long way towards doing that. Barrial has been a constant threat going up and down that left flank. And Celentano's been solid in the back. So they've been much more looking like a playoff. Like, I think this game will actually probably play out a little bit more like we saw in the playoffs last year. And Cincinnati's probably better prepared for that than last year when they would have wanted to go, like, let's go toe for toe. Let's score goals. Let's see who can hit in transition. And but I still think this Cincinnati team's in a good place for not playing their best at where they are on the table, which is, you know.
Two losses in their last 26 regular season games.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I would love to see how. I mean, I could
shout out to the great Steve Cangelosi. Yeah, he gave me that
I
stat.
Can do the research, but I would love to see how many losses they had in their first 26.
Yeah,
you know, like of any of those first three seasons,
more than two.
That's the other thing too. Is I spoke to Pat Noonan before their home opener, and he said coming into the season, we're not going to sneak up on anybody this year. Like you look at last year, and I think teams were thinking, oh, we're going to come in and rack up some goals.
So they're like, yeah, let's play an open game with you. Like, we can score more goals than you can.
Exactly. And I think teams now know much better than to try and enter into that type of thing, especially with the weapons they have. And yeah, we'll probably get to these guys. We mentioned it before, but Vasquez, Brenner, they're gonna click.
I was just going to ask, what is it? Because I just was looking at like expected goals. I was looking at goals like over performance against expected goals compared to last year. Shots, like this team's taking more shots. It's less expected goals. So, you know, maybe that's suggesting that the chances aren't quite as good.
Mm-hmm.
It also, I think you look at it and maybe those guys just aren't finishing. Like there were probably some overperformance from.
That's definitely part of it. I think especially in Vasquez's case, like I thought the one that he got at the match day five.
The rebound against Nashville.
Yeah. Sometimes you say, okay, that's going to open up the floodgates. He missed a header that you would expect him to score in this last one against Chicago. So I just think or was it DC? Who'd they play?
I'm blanking on it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Miami.
Yeah. Thank
you. My bad. You would expect him to finish that. You thought that was going to come. The only thing I noticed is at times they've looked a little disconnected with Brenner dropping really deep and Vasquez staying high. At their best, the two of them, it's more connected where it's pick your poison. Now, there was some disruption where Brenner wasn't around for the entire preseason with the rumored move to England. So I think, you know, maybe that was a part of it. But Acosta is still getting those three of them playing together more. They've had to do it more winning balls and like pushing forward. That's how Brenner got his goal with Huobito winning one earlier in the season. But getting those three to kind of play more connected, I think will be big for them to get on the end of things.
All right, big game this weekend in the Eastern Conference. Check it out. Cincinnati, Philadelphia, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. You know where to watch it. MLS Season Pass on Apple TV. Sounders, St. Louis City. What will Schmetzer do? Doyle, we praised him last week for sticking with the same 11 against the Galaxy, and it made sense based on how the Galaxy were going to play, being on the road, etc. Paid off in the first half. We've already sort of diagnosed the second half and what changed for the Galaxy, but the Sounders didn't deal with it well and had to hold on. Got a little fortunate maybe on that new who handball call as well. Again, that's a plug for instant replay. What do you think Brian Schmetzer will do?
It's a really good question, because what we've seen from Seattle this year is they want the ball, and the tactical adjustment, really a strategic adjustment that Schmetzer has made, is to set his team up in a way where they can use the ball better through midfield to not just create chances, but to also control tempo of the game, control where on the field the game is played. And they've been able to impose their will on almost everybody that they've come up against, including some very good teams already this year in Cincinnati. Well, Cincinnati was the one loss, and LAFC, like they've played some really, really good soccer. The one loss, as Kalen just mentioned, that Brenner goal came off the high press. Since he pressed Nico Ladero into a bad decision, turnover, three touches later, it's in the back of the net. That is obviously, in most ways, that's how St. Louis wants to play. So they want Seattle to come into this game thinking, we're going to use the ball, we're going to push St. Louis, we're going to punish them through the midfield, we're going to pull them apart, because when teams have tried to do that against City.
Oh, see, I'm just...
there it is.
I love it.
It's better in person.
I know. Yeah. I heard some...
So it's just better hits harder, you know?
City!
Yeah.
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 Don't do it too much, though. Okay. All right, that's enough.
When they're playing the all caps, like that... that has really worked for them. They have been able to create chances off of that. And like everybody remembers the three back passes to Klaus, and like for good reason, because they're ridiculous and they're hilarious that it happened. But like those are not typical. Even removing those, what's typical is St. Louis being able to create turnovers where they want to with the other team's fullback pressed up. So there's space to attack in behind, and then you have Alm or you have Jared Stroud, usually one of those two guys driving the ball forward. You're getting pullbacks across the six, pullbacks to the penalty marker, even to the top of the box, and they're capitalizing off of that. So it's a very I don't think either coach is going to adjust the way they play, and I like that, and I think it's the right call for the Sounders this early in the season to say, no, we're sticking with this changed perspective in terms of who we are.
That goes, yeah, with the decision making. I mean, first of all, I was saying, if you're Brian Schmetzer and you're looking at your number nine right now, who's Jordan Morris, who's leading the Golden Boot race, I think he has 8 goals.
He does.
And you look down the bench and you say, okay, well, I've got Rui Diaz here. And then you look down again, you say, I've got Eber. And you're like, that's a pretty good problem. Like, a lot of Major League Soccer managers would
don't have that problem.
Be desperate for this problem to have. So, first of all, it's a nice problem. When I think of their game against the Galaxy last week, the pattern that they scored on through Chu to Morris was something that you could potentially see maybe being a hybrid of playing through, but being pragmatic, where they play it into Sao Paulo. They're not afraid to play that one. Then it goes wide to Ladero, who plays
he's
that first time.
Back. Yeah. His ability to turn. He's
just
facing
turns
one way and turn one time a through
he
ball.
He just knows. He doesn't have to look. Yeah. Knows that Chu is going in behind. That's where you stretch it. And then from there, it's a race. And Jordan Morris is always going to win that one. I always think Schmetzer, to me, reminds me of Dom Kinnear as far as a manager and his style. I think the way he deals with players. I always felt with Dom, it was like, and sorry, guys, please indulge.
I am wrapped.
Yeah. this is a 2012 Dynamo show, my friend. Come on.
It was the one where if the team had been winning and the players had been playing well, that the team was likely going to stay the same. It wasn't going to be changed. And there was a sense within the locker room that you knew, we're on a roll. This is working. You want to see a guy like Leo Chu rewarded. You want to see a guy who had been on the outside, not successful. Now he's making the extra time stock up list. Like, that's what you... I'm just kidding.
Yeah, you talk about a feather in any player's
cap. Exactly. I mean, it's not an extra time award. Like, let's wait till the end of the season on those. But
so from that perspective, I could see him keeping the same lineup and running it back. And I think even as far as playing in transition against a team, if you break that first line of pressure, you get Morris, you get Chu going, that's going to be pretty deadly. The only thing is both of those two wins came on the road, and now they're returning home. So that would be the only way I could see him changing the mentality and saying to Chu, okay, yes, you've been great. We're gonna use you. Maybe even to use that depth as the match goes on. You slide Morris over, you bring in Rui Diaz. But that'd be the only reason I could see changing it.
Do you see Roldan over perhaps Nuhu at left back as a better option against the press?
No. Well, there is an argument for it. But I think the idea for this one is you're always going to keep the three in the back. The difference that Schmetzer, the change that Schmetzer has instituted this year is instead of a pulley system where the right back goes, the left back stays, and or the left back goes, the right back stays, it's always the left back staying.
Yeah.
It's always Nuhu sliding in to make it a three in the back line. And I think you want that for this one, even though Nuhu isn't the greatest in the world with the ball at his feet.
Adam hit us up in St. Louis and said, you learn a lot more from losses than wins. What did City learn from their first ever L, Doyle?
The expected lesson about dealing with a team that is going to put numbers behind the ball. We have seen all kinds of high-pressing teams struggle to beat opponents who are like, no, you can have the ball. That's fine. And it's just like you're going to have to develop final third patterns with the ball. You're going to have to get a little more quality out of Oostrak and Alm, maybe Joachini as well, if they stick with the two, which I think they probably will. But that's something that doesn't come instantly. That's something that has to come over time, especially if it's not your default. You know, this isn't, they're not going out there trying to play Wilfred Nancy soccer. They're going out there playing energy drink soccer.
Strange to say it, but I actually think a game on the road will be is the best thing for them. Agreed. Coming off a loss, because playing at home, I think that's where teams are going to suddenly play more like Minnesota United did, because of that environment and the atmosphere, the way they play. You just don't want to get swallowed by it. Whereas going on the road, you say, well, you know, Seattle might want to play a little bit.
You have to admit, though, part of you wants Seattle to just put 11 men behind the ball, dare St. Louis to come up, and then, like, annihilate them on the break.
Brian just winking down the end line at Bradley, like, you think we were
going
to do?
Yeah, no, but I think going on the road, they've already won 3 games on the road, too, in tough environments. So I think St. Louis will just kind of return back to normal.
All right, let's keep it moving. New York City FC, Atlanta United. This is a good matchup in the Eastern Conference. Corey Clayton hit us up and said, why is an extra time talking more about NYCFC? They're sixth in the East. We were pegged to be sub-10th by most. He asks, is it a rebuild season, or is it a reload, or maybe a revamp? Hashtag buy Thiago.
Almost like a reboot.
Reboot. Thiago Andrade, by the way, is gone on loan, I believe, to Brazil, looking for more playing time. You would assume. He also posited a relaunch, or maybe a rerun to the Eastern Conference Finals.
They're building their team on the fly. It's like a preseason right now. Like, they're bringing in players. Just since the season started, I remember the betting odds came out in the beginning of the season, and they were third. And I was looking at it, and I was like, what? They lost Sean Johnson. They lost Collins. They lost, like, I can't even go through the list. Maxi, yeah. You go through the list.
Didn't have Sanzi at that time, by the way.
Yeah. So, but now, throughout where they look now versus where they were 3 weeks ago is completely different. They've got James Sands back, who's been phenomenal. He's completely changed this team, coming back in with Parks. Then you add Santi back. They just brought in Ledesma, TBD on how he fits.
Can I just tweaking that front? I have to ask. Like, I would rather spend time on what we think Richie Ledesma is going to be.
Doyle, you know.
What we think Richie Ledesma is going to be?
Then dig in even more on other things with the Wizards.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully he can stay healthy. If he does stay healthy, I think he still has national team caliber upside. I think he has borderline best 11 in MLS caliber upside. He, like, his decision making on the ball was always really good. He sees the final pass. He always had easy speed, right? He wasn't the type of guy who had to get going to get up to his top speed. Like, Ledesma was always able to create separation. He spent 4 years in the Netherlands being hurt. Like, we haven't seen enough of that. We don't know if he's going to be able to stand up to the rigors of professional soccer week after week after week. I want to see that for 6 months before we really weigh in. I mean, I hope, I, you know, fingers
hoping
crossed.
Hoping for, like, a Keaton Park situation.
Yeah. And NYCFC is a pretty good landing spot if you're going to try to rebuild. The interesting thing tactically from this game, though, it's not the front three with NYCFC, though. It is interesting that Talis Magno did not start at center forward last week. He started on left wing. The interesting thing is, since James Sands got there, they've been playing mostly a single pivot. They've been just dropping him in front of the center backs and having him clean up and releasing Parks to go up almost as a second attacking midfielder. If you're playing Thiago Almada, you might want to have an extra set of boots in front of the back line. You might want to have someone else there who can cover some spots and keep that.
Morales, yeah.
Yeah.
They have an interesting model for NYCFC. They have a number of young guys that have come back across. We talked about players leaving. They've brought Sands back. They've brought Keaton Parks back. Now you see Ledesma. But the idea is to move them forward again.
Yeah.
So it's guys that have experience in Europe, have come back to MLS. So it's just an interesting thing I'm tracking, because I feel like we tend to look at it as like, oh, if you go and you come back, that's a failure, where these players are still like 21 years old and have European experience now. You already see, for me, I see the difference in Sands in a big way. So you'd hope that would happen for Ledesma as well.
Nick wants to know why Gonzalo Pineda didn't get a shout out for the coach that's most impressing. We did that on Monday without you. Kalen, would you add Gonzalo Pineda into that group given what Atlanta United has done so far?
I don't know. I would almost penalize him. He'll probably be happy about this, but for Thiago Almada, just how good he is. It's like, it's tough, but then you have the star player.
You should
just
impress if you have Thiago.
Like,
Almada.
Everybody on the team looks good. Jillian asked me in the preview, like, who else needs to step up around Almada? And I was like, Almada is creating, like, he's creating everyone, making everyone better around him through just the inertia that he has, the gravity that he has, the way he's able to spring other people forward. Giacomakis gets the rebound goal off his shot where he gets free at the top of the box. So I think Pineda will be happy to be included in that group of being lifted up maybe by his young superstar.
Yeah, nice little matchup there. A good one, LAFC Austin, a rematch of the Western Conference Finals from last year as well. This one's on Fox. I believe it's free on MLS Season Pass, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. I'm just going to read this quote from Carlos Vela. Quote, "I'm not happy where I am right now. I think I can play way better. If we're not playing good and are in a good position, imagine when myself starts to play better, score more goals, create more chances for my team. I think everything can be way better." And they have an open
He's not wrong.
Spot.
He's not wrong. Like LAFC are, they're unbeaten still in MLS play.
We're taping this Wednesday, so we don't know what happened in Vancouver Wednesday night. That's right. One caveat to this conversation.
But they have not played. It's like the Cincinnati thing. Like for the most part, other than 25 minutes down the stretch against the Revs, LAFC haven't really been. I guess they were really good on opening day or week two, match day two against Portland, but they haven't. They haven't built on that. They haven't looked like the team that they were for the most part last year. So I think Vela is 100% correct, but I think that this game, it's much more interesting to see what version of Austin we get. Because Austin, it feels like Austin, we made this point, like Austin's still above the playoff line. Feels like they're one bad performance away from a real crisis, doesn't it?
Yeah, and part of it is because of the lack of depth, which we already hit on. And I think the part of the success for the other side is LAFC's depth and the ability that they have where... Yeah.
Every signing this offseason...
it's just all hit.
In a big, like, forget the David Goss theorem way.
Them and Seattle, to me, those are the two... I would say the two deepest teams when I look at the rosters and the performance around the year.
Tillman, two goals already, basically been a starter in almost every match they've played. Aaron Long, best 11 quality, not up to best 11 speed yet, I wouldn't say, but you figure over the course of the year, you get him there, and if you don't play him, it's Chiellini.
Yep.
Like Palencia.
Yep.
Can play both fullback positions. Hollingshead goes down.
Bjuke can play either.
Mateusz Bogusz they just signed. I don't know. I just wanted to say it because it's
a good
name.
First try. Yeah.
No, I think that one's right. Oh, I talked to my guy who lived in Poland for a long time. So if you're Polish out there listening, we probably have Polish listeners. Yeah, you're trying to go to VAR on me. Don't bring VAR in on this. I mean, he has comes from Leeds United, has a good pedigree, sort of in the same bucket as maybe a Bjuke. Where needs a little momentum in his career, looking
and
to
let's
get
not
LA.
Forget that John McCarthy is not their number one goalkeeper, and he's been very good this year.
No. Good point. All right, we'll see. Big game in the West. LAFC Austin. Where in the world is Kalen Carr this weekend? Where else would you be, Kalen?
Bass Pro Shops in Foxborough, Massachusetts.
Braintree, Massachusetts. No, that's the old place where we used to stay up there.
Oh, okay. I was like, I don't know what that
is. Yeah. You talk about
sounds like a children's museum.
It's the Topeka of Massachusetts.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Ouch. Yeah. Look, as a Kansan, I can say that Topeka is not my favorite city in Kansas.
Yeah. No, Braintree and I, we don't really see eye to eye. So, I'll be up there for the Revs and Montreal. Montreal coming off a brutal match against Becher and company.
Becher,
excuse me. All due respect, the Topeka native.
Simone.
big. It's a tough one for Montreal. They're up against it because they also, in that match, lost Sam Piette, who was just coming back from injury. I think re-aggravated something. And then Camacho goes out with a red card as well, too. So Hernan Losada is, I would say, under some pressure, needs to get this back under. We talked about going off of bad results and not letting them come back. We saw Colorado, your favorite club of all time.
I was wondering when you were going to give
sorry.
Me props on that.
I don't know those props. Bottom of the table. But they need to shore things up in the back, and it's a tough place to go again. They've had a long stretch on the road. I think four out of their five matches on the road. Now again going to Gillette Stadium on turf again. I think they've probably played every match on turf this season, it seems like, even at home. So it's been tough. But Wanyama's someone we're gonna focus on for sure.
All right.
He's one to watch.
That's where in the world Kalen Carr is. Quickire, games to watch. Sell us on the deep cuts. Doyle, what's your deep cut?
Inter Miami versus FC Dallas, specifically because of the Joseph and Campana potential. Seeing those two guys up top for Inter Miami, really for the first, I believe it'd be the first time all year. I
thought we saw it for a hot second in preseason, maybe. I'm trying to think back.
But I don't think that was.
But that's not real.
Yeah, that wasn't.
That's pretend soccer.
Yeah. So I'm interested in that. I'm not sure the season hinges on that, though, for Inter Miami. It hinges on figuring out how to replace Gregory. Is it like, can Jean Mota be more of a bulldog ball winner? I don't think so. Does Bryce Duke have that? I don't think so. Victor Ulloa is a nice player to have, but I don't think he's a a starting six for a playoff team. So, this is another four straight losses since Gregory went out. He was their one irreplaceable guy. I think that has borne out. I don't know what the solution is. I don't know if a solution actually exists in that roster. And then it's up to Dallas to take advantage of it and turn that into multiple goals, which they have struggled to do. Paul Ariola and Alan Velasco not as productive as they had been in the past or last year.
I'm going to take – I had taken the Kalen Carr Bowl, which is obviously Houston, LA Galaxy. I am instead going to take the Columbus Crew going to D.C. as my – it's not really a deep cut. I get a little bit of a deep cut. But we have some questions on the Crew. So Luke says, given how quickly they've adapted to Nancy's style of play, what's the ceiling for this Crew team? What do we think the ceiling is for them in the Eastern Conference? How high can they finish?
I mean, they look like the Montreal team last year as far as they look eerily similar, right, with the style of play, the addition of young players, the star attacking midfielder. I'd say maybe even have an extra piece if Cucho Hernandez can come back and score goals. That's the scary part of this.
Cucho's got a little bit of like Romel Kyoto but better
right.
vibes to him.
10 goals, I think, in their last two games without him.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, to be fair.
Atlanta.
Say it.
I mean, Atlanta's reserves and RSL's academy is weird.
Okay.
That was a huge rotation from Pablo Mastroianni. He must have been very frustrated by that St.
Trying to send a message.
Loss. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, what do you think?
They look good.
The most interesting?
Ceiling
for the Crew? I mean, top five in the East. I wouldn't be shocked if they finished top two in the East. I don't think they have enough juice to win it. But like if they end up around 60 points and nobody wants to play them in the postseason, that would not shock me at all.
One of the most interesting teams in the league by far to watch week to week what Nancy is building. It's fun. It's fun.
My favorite team to watch week to week.
Yeah.
And I know that you made me write down the Quakes later on in this segment.
I did.
You want me to just take it from there?
Sure. Why not?
The Quakes are interesting because Lucci is trying to build something that is ball dominant and spread the field, make it wide, don't just make it vertical. And a lot of managers are going in sort of the other direction these days, and I understand why. But it's just nice to see something a little bit philosophically more oriented towards having the ball. And what's interesting about this weekend, because they're playing the Red Bulls, is the one game in which San Jose have looked a disaster this year was at St. Louis.
Yeah.
So it's okay, can you use the ball at home against a good Houston team? You can. You can create penalties. You can, create chances, and you can win. Can you go on the road against a pressing team who wants to turn everything into chaos and use the ball? Well, so far, you're 0 for 1. Let's see what happens. Is Lucci going to stick to his philosophy? Are the Quakes going to try to play through it? I think they will. That makes them a really interesting team to watch week after week. It makes them especially interesting this weekend.
We've blown up Christian Espinoza, and for good reason. If you look at the numbers on Cade Cowell so far this season, he's getting opportunities. He's not yet finishing, so still looking for that next step in Cade Cowell's development. Still early, but looking for that from him. Give me your game to watch, Kalen, and then we'll roll through some mail.
All right, deep cut. This is our deeper cut game because I had Philly. Oh, I'm doing
no disrespect to the teams.
New England,
that are
Montreal.
In the deeper cut.
I'm beyond it.
You're very deep in our hearts.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to my Midwest roots a little bit, which you didn't know about. The Fire, the Kai Kamara tour continues scoring goals. Hype for that against Minnesota United, the big story coming off of last weekend. And it's just kind of on brand for the Kalen community to hype up the
Is it? So if you're loons? If you are Kai, fully one-third of your games should be against former teams, right?
Mm-hmm.
Does he celebrate?
Yeah. He's always against a former team.
Of course
team.
He's going
to celebrate. Minnesota United's a former team. When is it not against a former
team? Here's something. I'm going to take this in a totally different direction, and I think it's a direction Weeby will really appreciate. This is a potential rivalry, right? Because neither of these teams have a real rival in MLS. Tried to make it happen for years with Minnesota and Sporting KC. That didn't really take.
Too nice.
The Fire have had rivalries because they were good. And it was rivalries with the other teams who happened to be good at
Columbus,
the time.
Columbus, Dallas, there's history there. The Revs, from that, like,
Right.
Yeah.
And like the Crew, like the Fire are never going to be the Crew's main rival again.
Right.
It's going to be Cincinnati. The Fire don't have a main rival. Minnesota don't have a main rival. These two fan bases are used to not liking each other because of Big Ten stuff and because of hockey stuff and because especially of NFL stuff, the Bears and the Vikings. I'm hoping that we see...
Let's invent a rivalry!
I'm hoping we see it, man!
This oh is my like, gosh!
We're in Weeby's wheelhouse! Rivalry.
Ah, I knew that was going somewhere!
Look at how happy he is! Look at how happy he is!
Invented a rivalry! You're welcome!
Come
you
up with
are
a name!
Welcome.
Come up with a name for
Chicago,
it!
Chicago, this whole entire city of Chicago.
Where would you rank Minnesota versus Chicago among
if we were going to
classic
list rivalries.
MLS rivalries?
If we would were to list rivalries, where in the list?
Anders
this fall?
Versus all of us. Yes. He is begging
by
us
the way,
to rap.
By the way, we have now our powers of negotiation here. We have added 10 minutes onto
yeah,
this show
this
simply by
it.
Ignoring Anders in the chat.
It's great.
Very easy.
It still works. Even
he's
in
not
person.
Coming through yeah. that door. That's what we've learned.
Yeah, he is. He's coming through the door with five. Angry Teamsters at the end of this. So this might be our
okay,
last show, everyone.
This is the last one. Mailbag, Lucas, and we're just reading this one, Anders. I'm just saying, we're just reading this one, then I got one more. Since you doubled down on your Robin Fraser take, Weeby, should someone trade for him? Maybe, but let's fix it in Colorado first, Robin. Let's come on, you and I, same page. I'm rooting for you. Dudes B, who's the best performing D mid in the league so far this season?
Ilya, probably. Is there in Sao Paulo.
I was
Sao
Paulo
looks like Sao Paulo again, yeah.
It's just like quietly reoccupying you know, top spot.
Matt Polster's been really good, but he missed a couple weeks now, I think.
All right. See, Anders? We got it that quick.
That was quick.
I yeah. like that.
So we're back in the studio. Let us know
I'll throw it
what
out
you
to
think.
Sands. I'll add Sands to the list.
Okay. Let us know what you think of a semi-new experience, in-person experience, what you'd like to see. We miss you, David Goss. I will say that. And we'll have the
You can
the
listen
other
to David
Taylor.
Goss.
Yeah, you can.
MLS season pass. He's down in, yeah, yeah. down in Florida. I almost said Frisco.
Yeah, it's a hard habit to break. Yeah. Hard habit to break. Anyway, we're out of here. Enjoy the weekend, match day 7. We'll see you on Monday. Adios.